This week's Parashas Mishpatim. There are a lot of details in Parashas Mishpatim. It's filled with details. What details? Yeah, details of really boring things. Like, okay, someone hurt somebody else, this gets broken, you have to pay. It's Bava Kama, it's Bava Metzia, yeah, it's all of those cool things. Right, getting nailed to the doorpost by their ear, that happens every day. But let's take a step back for 1 minute. Why? I have two questions. Why is Parashas Mishpatim in the Torah? And why is it here? Now, the first question I just asked, why is it in the Torah? I got a really funny look from Amya. And Josh said, What?
Why would it not be?
Okay. And Albert says, why would it not be? So I would like someone to make an argument that this parasha actually doesn't belong in the Torah. Shlomo, you're the newest one in our share. What do you think? How come we can't find him anymore?
What?
I want someone here to make an argument that this week's parasha does not belong in the Torah at all.
Is there like a specific...
No, just in general. From what you know...
The Torah doesn't go into detail when you just laws or whatever. Look at the Asarim Devarim, just says don't kill. It doesn't say don't kill by a knife or what hasn't been killed by a knife.
So Yehuda wants to suggest that maybe there's so many details that usually details are left up perhaps more to Tersha Balpeh.
Right, but on the other hand, you can say that we just got the broad 10 things and now it's going into detail and what happens on every single one, so it does belong.
Okay. Maybe details are more necessary. Anybody else?
That would have been my guess. So I don't have any guess.
Had you had a guess, that would have been your guess. You didn't, but had you. Got it. Anybody else?
I feel like there could be more important things that could be said. I mean, I don't really know what to say. Give us love, man.
Well, peruse it really quickly. You have the article there, right? It has headlines on the side? So just read the headlines quickly. In the first few...
From which,
towards the beginning. Beginning starts with Evan Ivry, which we're going to come back to. But then it starts talking about if you kill someone,
says,
you get killed. You know, you curse your parents.
Jewish bondsman, sale of a daughter, murder and manslaughter.
Murder, manslaughter, punishment. Killing a slave.
Penalties
for hurting somebody,
animal,
injury, animals that do property that does damage.
A pet, damage
damages. Things happen every single day in court. This is what's happening every single day, all the time. Guy gets hurt, and the trucker, he's unloading, he falls off, he hits a pothole. You know, you slip in front of his house, somebody's house on the ice, so they have to pay. Right?
Is it more that this is like a lot between? I mean, this is damage. It's like a lot
damages.
Between man and man.
That's right. So go ahead, spell it out for us, Josh.
Well, I mean, now I have another question about it.
Okay, so hold off on your question for 1 second. See if would you be able to make an argument that the things delineated in this week's parsha really didn't have to be in the Torah at all? Can you make such an argument?
Yeah, because most of the Torah, you don't see such a detailed amount of laws between just man and man. Then, yes, there are the Asarim Devarim, where 5 of them are between man and man, or 6 technically. But these go into much further detail, and there's just a lot of them.
What would have been if the Torah had not given us any instructions for the laws of damages? Would we have said, you don't have to pay if you damage somebody else?
No.
We would have made all these laws, correct?
No.
When we speak about the concept of mishpatim, how does it start? How parsha start? Oh. Look at that. Hey, love mishpatim. There are chukim and there are mishpatim. Mishpatim are the types of things that what?
We understand.
We understand. What does it mean we understand?
They're not just things that we do without a reason.
Had a Kadosh Baruch Hu never told us these things.
Just
this is basically done anyway. So doesn't that just beg the question? Then why did he say it?
Oh, because we're clearly not moral people, and people are inherently bad.
But society would have solved that problem.
No, society is not a thing. Society is built on religious morals.
Josh, well, that's deep.
Well, then let me ask you a different question, Josh.
I came straight out of
the Before the Torah said this, did any of these laws exist? Seriously.
No.
You're all, aren't some of you taking intro to Bible?
When did Hammurabi come to play?
You tell me. Someone Google. I have your phone. And if I don't, then yeah, I shouldn't see Googling, right? It was earlier. All these things came before Matan Torah.
Yeah.
That's one of those biblical criticism things.
Yeah.
There were tort laws, laws of damages and whatnot, before the Torah was given. Because as corrupt and immoral as you want society to be, still, I mean, people have to get along. It has to be, things have to function. So what do you say? So, argue point, but wait a minute. There are definitely going to be certain details that we wouldn't have said it in that way, that's for sure. I mean, you have to pay double if you steal, and if there's four or five, depending on what it is. We wouldn't have said that. So, a Kaddish Baruch Hu does have nuances. Is that okay? A safe word? Nuances, details within the punishments that we wouldn't have said otherwise. That's true. Yeah. Shlomo?
Like, maybe Israel assumes they're not a special nation. They're a D nation. So something different is expected of them.
Whoa.
So they need to get the law done.
So like they can steal now and...
No, they need to know specifically because it's probably not the same code as the Egyptians had because they're not the Egyptians anymore.
Wow. Did anybody hear what someone just said?
Yeah.
So I think what you're answering is my second question. Why does this have to be here, and why here? So what are we on the coattails of? What just happened in the last parsha? Come on. Everybody goes to shul and hears Kriyas Torah. What do we just do? The Aseres HaDibros. Har Sinai. And then at the end, we're given a couple of details on the coattails of Har Sinai. You know, don't do certain things based on what you saw. Don't think you saw anything. You didn't see, etc., etc. Mizbeach is at the end of last week's parsha. But that's where we're coming from. So right after our Sinai is when the Kaddish Baruch Hu chooses Ve'ele HaMishpatim. That Vav. What does Vav literally mean? Anybody know?
And.
What's a Vav? It means and. But what does the word Vav mean?
It means something.
It means something. Vavei ha'amudim is a word that's going to come up very soon, related to the Mishkan. What are vavei ha'amudim? What's an amud? A pillar, a beam. What are the vavei ha'amudim? Bal kore.
I'm trying to figure out the word in English.
In English. Any fishermen here?
No.
It's a hook. A vav means a hook. Vavei ha'amudim means the hooks that were on the pillars that you hang things on. A vav is a hook. Eile ha'mishpatim would have meant what? Whatever I said before, ignore. This is something new. It doesn't say that. It says ve'eile ha'mishpatim. Ve means and in addition to whatever I just said, this is a continuity of that. I'm hooking this onto that. It's connected. So why does this have to be connected? The answer is that Kaddish Baruch Hu is saying in no uncertain terms, everything I'm telling you now in Parshas Mishpatim is a continuity of Har Sinai. Which begs the question, but I'm going to go exactly the direction of Shlomo. And I'm going to answer another question that really bothers me. It always bothered me. Let's say that we'll somehow come up with an answer we're satisfied with. Why Mishpatim are in the Torah. And maybe even why they need to be connected to Har Sinai. Maybe because of those details, like Amiel said. Because there are certain nuances that we wouldn't have known otherwise. So you have to know, there are certain things. I'm telling you, says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, that are not what Hammurabi said, or what the Egyptians, or the whoever was making laws previous to that. It's different. Good? Why start with Eved Ivri? Does that bother you?
Yeah.
What does Evan Ivry even have to do with any of that? Evan Ivry, can you imagine? Boom, boom, boom! I was reading this story about Ruchatskal Levinstein. Ruchatskal, so apparently in the morning, when there was only a couple of Rosh Yeshiva up early learning, he would go into the Beis Medrash, and I don't know if he was in his own section or whatever it was, but he was in the Beis Medrash, he would take his shtender, and he would bang it on the ground, boom, 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 like making loud noises. And then he would say to himself, that's nothing compared to Har Sinai. Nothing compared to Har Sinai. He wanted to feel what it must have been like to be at Har Sinai when the Torah was given. Imagine being there with the noises, it just being completely loud and overwhelmingly terrifying. And knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I'm giving you the Torah. This is what life is about. This is necessary for existence. And feeling like, okay, this is it. And that feeling of awe and of the necessity of Torah, he wanted to instill within himself every day. And people would like walk in the Spanish, like, what is that noise? And those Rosh Yeshiva that were learning to be like, that's just Rav Chatzkel. We don't notice it anymore, you know? He always wanted to make things feel real to himself. Right after that tremendous experience of Har Sinai, and everything that it represents, and everything that they're coming away with, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Evan Ivry. Evan Ivry. I mean, I can think of a word for that. Anticlimactic. No? So, I will throw it out to you. Josh, you have a suggestion? Why in the world, of all things, I start with Arba V'Chamisha, right? I'm the one to do that, I'm looking at you. So, why not start with a detail that we wouldn't have known otherwise? That would have made the point. Evan Ivry? Moshe, have some for me? Why Evan Ivry? This always bothered me. Benjamin, what do you say? You have a thought? No. Yoav? No? Joseph? Joseph has a thought. You have a thought? No? So I have an idea. I think it's exactly the same idea that Shlomo said. You want to try and make the connection? The question is, why would Evan Ivry begin this whole Parshas Mishpatim? Of all things after Har Sinai to start with, why Evan Ivry?
Because we were slaves.
Okay. Okay. Now that you're free.
No, that you shouldn't treat your slaves the way that you were treated in the Egypt.
Because now you might think that, like, you know, you're the spitz. You can just do whatever you want to anybody else. It's not a nice way to look at Klal Yisrael, but okay, I guess I can.
Isn't that what he was saying before? Isn't that what he said?
I don't know. What, Shlomo, what were you saying before?
Well, God says you're special now, so then he's special. Not better.
So I'd like to say like this. You ready? What happened to the people that stood at Har Sinai? Kadosh Baruch Hu tells them, not just am I giving you a bunch of laws, right? That you're going to be a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. That's what Shlomo was saying. You're not normal people anymore. You now have a special relationship with me, a special mission to the world, vis-a-vis the people, vis-a-vis the maintenance of existence of the world. You are my mamleches koyhanim v'goy kadosh. I want you to know something, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. You can't be a slave anymore. Nobody can own you. Because owning a slave means you're a piece of property that can be owned. You can't be a slave anymore. Because you are Klal Yisrael. Do you hear that idea? Even another member of Klal Yisrael cannot own another member of Klal Yisrael. He doesn't have the rules of Avadim. You don't acquire him like you would an Eved. There's no such thing as a Jew going into the market and say, hi, I'm for sale. If Beis Din sells him, okay. How does he even manage to sell himself if he's poor and he needs money? How does that even work? And this whole idea that a Nezikin, you can evaluate him like a slave, is a huge chiddush, because he's not a slave and he can't be. And the rest of this whole parasha, you take a look at the Rashis, it's all about the distinctions between an Eved Kenani and an Eved Ivri. This one, he goes until, you know, L'doray Sam, Yerusha. A slave goes as an inheritance, but not a Jew. And the whole parsha is on the coattails of that. But do you see how that spells it out more than anything else? More than all of the laws of the rest of this parsha, that you have to know that your rules are not the same rules as everybody else. More is expected of you. There's a difference. Maybe none of those rules even apply to you anymore because you are now Mamlechas Koihanim V'Goy Kodesh. No, the laws apply. They have subtleties, they have nuances, there's certain differences, it's true. But if you take a look, David, in the parsha, even in the headlines that you read, do you notice, right after Eved Ivri, Ma'ake Ish Vameis, a murderer, what do you do to him? You kill him. Now, guys, Aseres HaDibros, right? Did it say anything about murder? Or that was left out? It did? No? Maybe? Not sure? Loi, Tirtzach, don't kill. Don't we know this already? What's the difference?
They didn't really go in depth last parsha.
Right, so this is getting in depth, right? It's very deep. It says, if you kill someone, he dies. A lot of details there.
A little bit more in depth than that.
But what did it add?
That it dies.
That he dies. Why does it need to add that he dies? Because Chevra, when you become Mamleches Koihanim V'Goy Kadosh, who says you can even kill him?
Yeah, but that's the scale of how bad it is. No, it just says don't kill.
It's so bad, but the point is that all that's being added in this parasha is that you have a right to kill him. You might have thought you don't even have a right to kill him. Mamleches Koihanim V'Goy Kadosh is on such a level, you have no right to touch him. You can't own him. Eved Ivri, that's a different subject altogether. He's not really an Eved. And you might have thought, you can't even kill him. The Torah should have said, if a person murders, what form of death penalty do you give him? It doesn't do that. It just says you kill him. The Chiddush is that you kill him. You would have thought you can't. So this is the introduction to the Parsha of Mishpatim.
Because it just says don't kill. So if someone kills someone, then you would think that you can't kill that person.
So why? Why would you think that, asks Yehuda? What's Berman trying to say? So, can you explain it? Albie, you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, because we're the Kohanim.
They're untouchable. Yeah. You have no right over their life. You have no right to do that.
We say that's logical and there's no need for that like,
what do you mean?
We have no, it just doesn't make
sense. Yisera Zedibra says, right? You're not allowed to kill.
Right.
Let's say that someone killed. So everybody knows. He took someone else's life. Take his. Makes sense. Death penalty, we can debate the death penalty. We can say, does it make sense? Is it simply a way of taking revenge for society, for the family? Is it a deterrent? Is that justified? We could get into that debate about capital punishment for a person that was a murderer. So Yisera Zedibra just says, you're not allowed to kill. Now, let's say a person did. So, in the world at large, you have mishpatim, you have this debate on capital punishment. But if you have a person who's defined as mamleches koihanim v'goy kadosh, maybe that discussion doesn't start. Because I agree with you, in general, we have to have this calculation about capital punishment, but he's part of this special group that are untouchable. You have no right over his body. You can't own him. I'm sorry, we'll have to leave it up to God. You might have thought that. Parshas Mishpatim doesn't tell you how to kill him, because it's not the point. The point is that you can, and you have to. Because you would have thought that you can't. You hear the idea? What?
Really?
I'll be here. You hear what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
No, a little bit? No? Totally? Amelia, you with me? Moshe, you hear me? Think it through. David hears the question. Why does Parshas Mishpatim begin with Eved Ivri? Of all things, why do we need to know any of these Mishpatim? Let the court system take care of these things on their own, whatever they deem appropriate. Why do you have to say, if a person kills, you kill him, and don't tell me how? You didn't even tell me how. So I think that all of these questions can be answered with one answer.
It's probably going to say later on in the parsha how you kill him.
Take a look. Take a look. It's complicated.
No, not this part.
All of the capital punishments are complicated.
Not this part. It's later on.
It's learned out in different ways based on what it says over here, and then the limud over here, and when it says death, what is it referred to? Is stam misa this? Is stam misa that? So the Gemara is trying to work out what exactly is the punishment based on the language in each place. But the point is that we already said don't kill. We know you're not allowed. So all that's being added here is that you do kill the person that did it. So I think that that's what's going on. Is that Kalal Yisrael has just become Kalal Yisrael. They are not regular humans anymore. And they cannot be related to like they've been related to until now. They are a new Bria. They're Mamlechas Kaihanim V'Goy Kadosh. They need their own rules. They need to know that these rules do apply to them and they're not above the law. And you need to know that you don't have a right to own one of these people anymore. It doesn't work like that. And perhaps the biggest Kiddush is that, but nonetheless, you have not just the right, but the responsibility to kill one of these people if they violated one of these things that's deserving of death. I think that's the yesod of Ve'eileh HaMishpatim. It's on the coattails of Har Sinai. That is the whole point. It could have, after Har Sinai, we could have dealt with more spiritual laws. We could have dealt with all kinds of things about Shabbos and, you know, Tefillin, whatever people think is more spiritual and those kinds of things. It doesn't. The first topic right afterwards is Ve'eileh HaMishpatim, the most practical, down-to-earth, nitty-gritty things that you can imagine. And that's how the Torah begins. Ve'eileh HaMishpatim is basically the first thing we're being taught after Har Sinai.
What makes someone a slave? Like, does the Torah say at what point someone becomes a slave?
There are basically two scenarios. One scenario, the basic scenario, is that a fellow did something wrong, he stole something, he did whatever he did, and he doesn't have enough money to pay back. So Beis Din sells him as an Eved Ivri in order to pay back the person for what he owes him.
Okay.
That's the basic scenario.
So would you consider someone just works for this family for free, but gets to live there without paying rent, a slave?
No.
Why not?
An Eved Ivri has a lot of technicalities. The technicalities are that he has to work for a certain amount of time until he can buy himself back, and there are a lot of technicalities involved in just being, I mean, technically an Eved Ivri. If a person just works for somebody else, you know, they may have a lot of responsibilities. Yeah, he may have a lot of responsibilities or whatever, but he doesn't have all the technicalities.
Is that considered being a slave?
Not an Eved Ivri. A real slave is a person that's mamish owned. The body is owned. I own you. But an Eved Ivri is a person whose body cannot be owned. It's not possible. So he just has certain rules that he has all kinds of obligations for a very specific, delineated amount of time. But in any case, I think that's a powerful idea. I think that it's not just an idea. I think it comes out of the parasha. So I think if that's the type of thing that you're able to present to somebody else, so you really begin to have a sense. Don't look at it in the negative, that Kalal Yisrael are so special that we look down on the rest of the world. That's not the point. The point is that you see from this parasha that Kalal Yisrael are different. We've been raised up. And because of that, there are rules that do apply to us, but you might have thought that they didn't. You might have thought we're in this very unique category. You should know. We do have our own rules. We have our own structure. But it does go to show that Kalal Yisrael are unique and very different. And they are now Mamleches Kohanim, Bogoy Kodesh, and have to be related to as such. Here. Yeah.